today with my guest, Matt Zoe. I guess that's how you pronounce it, The Unleavened One. And we're going to be talking about his book, The Rascal's Guide to Enlightenment. And with the economic crisis, it's a good time to develop a sense of humor. Hey, Matt Zoe, how are you doing?
Good. I'm very good. Thank you. Thank you. And actually, the full title of my book, it's a very short, concise title, is The Rascal's Guide to Enlightenment, How to Become Enlightened on a Budget by Taking a Course in the Power of the Celestial Shmicker Prophecy Demonstra Code Now, Copyright Registered Trademark, OM. You see how that rolls off the tongue?
Well, yes, it does. That's great. So, you want to tell us how you became enlightened?
Sure. Why not? I had many enlightened experiences. I've studied with many different teachers, but as I talk about in the book, actually in the preface of the Rascal's Guide to Enlightenment, I had a very profound experience back in 1987. Basically, I was living in Manhattan at the time, and I had a job on Wall Street, believe it or not.
Really?
Yes, yes. Very, very interesting and yet checkered past I have.
Well, we'll have to get your take on what's happened on Wall Street in a few minutes.
But absolutely.
Go ahead with your story.
So basically, I was 19 at the time. I was very impressed with myself that I was living in New York, that I was working on Wall Street.
Yeah.
It was Sunday. I got the New York Times. I got into a Korean market, got some food. I went to the park. I thought, here I am. I'm some big sort of fancy schmancy guy. It was sunny out. There was some people feeding pigeons nearby me. Everything felt great. And then and I felt so, you know, important and a big shot. And then a bird came around and pooped on my head.
and in that
moment, I had the realization that as important as my personality could seem, you know, the universe was trying to give me a message to lighten up. So that, I felt, was the beginning of my enlightenment process. But I don't recommend it for everybody, unless you have tissues with you.
Yeah, that's right. Especially if you're eating food.
That's true. Try to get a covered container.
Yeah, that's right. Well, so what happened after that? How did you get into the comedy business?
Well, I actually, when I'm not wearing the wig and the glasses and all the other outfit, I did do stand-up comedy. It began many, many years ago, actually, when I was in high school. And then what happened was, over time, I got into metaphysics. I actually dropped out of college, and I started to learn about metaphysics. And so my dream was always one day to combine my love of philosophy and metaphysics with the humor. And what basically happened was is that after many, many years of self-study and personal growth, I became a teacher. And so where I was living at the time, I became somewhat well-known, and I began to have followers. And it began to make me nervous because I could see how people were, you know, very easily, you know, willing to give over their power to somebody who just seemed a little bit less neurotic. And I'm just like one or two degrees less neurotic than everybody else. But but I was giving a class, and so I decided that, why don't I give the same class my usual guru outfit, which is my white outfit that I was wearing at the time.
Mm-hmm.
And I said, let me put on a beard and the glasses and do a parody of my class in front of my students and see what happens. So I went to the same yoga studio and I the same outfit, then added the sunglasses, did a parody, invited all my students, and half of them didn't recognize it was me.
Oh, no. That's great.
So I think it was all about what is reality, what people believe. And so the Matzo character is actually a parody of self-serving gurus where I actually give real teachings, but it's trying to shock people and wake them out of their own, you know, giving away their own power.
Well, I had some patients, because I'm a doctor, go and study with some of the gurus, some of the well-known gurus, and they would come back to me and say, I can't believe that guru curses. And I go, why shouldn't they curse? You know, what is it that makes us judge somebody, like, bad because they curse, and if you're enlightened, you shouldn't curse? But a lot of the times, the gurus really will try to break down the student's ego by degrading them, even cursing at them, and doing whatever is necessary in order to break down their ego. And I thought, and there was a pattern of this out there, which I thought was very interesting.
Well, as human beings, we have definitions about ourselves. You know, you can say, like, for example, you're a woman, you're a doctor. You know, I could list all the, you know, I could list your biography, all the things you've done.
Right.
But that's not your eternal self. That's simply what you're doing in this current time frame. So what tends to happen is we have a lot of programming, and so to break out of that programming, yeah, sometimes you'll do, like, one path is yoga. You know, that's not exactly my thing, but people will do yoga, and they'll sit in the body pose. It takes them out of the mind, or they will do service, or they will do various things to sort of go, you know, get outside of themselves. And so I found with the humor, all my life, like, funny things happened to me. Like, many, many years ago, I was working in an office, and I was in charge of the computers, and basically I was very high-strung because I was new on the job. I was having to learn a lot of information. A lot of it was new, and I was, one day I was at the computer and fixated on what was going on the monitor, and I wasn't paying attention. So when I finished what I needed to do on the computer, I went to sit down, and I fell on my butt because there was no chair there. I was so fixated, and so everybody in the office around me started to laugh, and I realized that it was the universe telling me, you know, don't be so stressed out. Relax. It'll be okay. So funny things happen to me, and so that tended to break me out in addition to actually studying spiritual texts, the combination of the humor and the spirituality.
I'll tell you one thing that can break down your ego that people don't realize can, but if they ever try it, they'll see that it does, and that's panhandling.
Oh, that's right.
You go into a park and panhandle, ask people for money.
Oh, but
it breaks down your ego.
Well, I promote that. That's one of the products in the Rascal's Guide. Yeah, didn't you read my book?
I did.
The Matzah brand tip jar. You know what tip stands for?
Uh-uh.
One, the old meaning is to ensure perfect service.
Okay.
But I like to say to ensure perfect spirituality. So everybody out there, please tip your guru.
Yeah. No, I didn't see that. Maybe
there's many, many matzo brand products. I'm not surprised. At the end of every chapter is a matzo brand product and the matzo code, and so there's a lot of information. There are some guys in life that are chock full of stuff.
Right.
It's chock full of stuff.
So do you have a website with all this stuff on it?
Yes, yes. Everybody can come to my website and make outrageous donations to my ashram at guru matzo.com. I accept all major credit cards. Checks, even eggs. I'm kind of getting into bartering right now. So
that's right. Bartering will be good when the dollar devalues.
That's euros. I'm into euros, drachmas, whatever, rupees.
Yeah.
I can exchange. I have an international exchange. I can take anything.
Well, I called up my broker the last week in August, and I said, I need to get out of the market because the market's going to crash and the dollar's going to devalue, and he argued with me. But he did what I asked him to.
Good.
But now we're looking at the dollar devaluing. As someone who worked on Wall Street, what do you think that's going to look like? Are we going to barter a lot more?
Well, I was actually working at the time with the last stock market crash in '87. I used to work in the World Trade Center when it was up, and then I was there, and I was working for Merrill Lynch. And we got laid off because after the crash of '87, they laid off 10% of their staff, so I was fairly new. It was an interesting experience. I'm not a qualified broker. I'm more about receiving money than giving advice to other people. But
money.
But I will say, and this may be of help to the listeners, you know, we can buy into a lot of the mass thoughts. Now, some people say, oh, it's terrible, the housing price has gone down, and this has gone down. But let me tell you something.
If you want to buy a house, it's good.
If you buy a house, it's good. But there's a couple of different things I think we're learning from this. I think we had to really deal with the idea of materialism, that people just buy so much stuff. I mean, it's a little bit of a sickness, I think, here in the United States.
Mm-hmm.
I know the house values. I mean, if somebody wants to buy a house, I mean, some of the house values were so over the top, inflated.
Oh, my God, I couldn't believe it.
So that was a problem.
Yeah.
But also, and I'll tell you, I had a wonderful experience. I traveled to Venezuela. This was before Chavez took over in 2002, I think I went. And anyway, I traveled there. I was teaching. And the people there, you know, they don't have a lot of wealthy people there. It's very stratified there. But the people there in Venezuela were so loving, were so warm. They didn't have much, but they were full of love.
Right.
And that's something I think for people to reflect upon is, you know, it's nice to have the latest doodad and gadget and this, that, and thing. And, of course, I want everybody who's listening to go out and buy the Rascal's Guide to Enlightenment because it's a must-have. But love, feeling loved, feeling a connection with other people, I know for myself, you know, I would just love to have more experience of love in my life. That would, you know, money's good and there's nothing the matter with it, but I think we're having to look at our values, and I think it's just a major paradigm shift to really allow abundance, which is money, but it's also love, security, but also trust. because I don't think people have a lot of trust in Wall Street or the government right now. And I think we have to reevaluate, because to me, we are the government. I'm not looking to Obama or any representative to solve all the problems. Mm-hmm. I look at what I can do locally, what I, you know, can do as a, as an individual, because we are the government. So many lessons.
Have you been back to New York after 9/11?
No, I haven't been there for many years. I mean, I knew when I was leaving in the very early 90s, I knew that it was undergoing changes. I mean, they cleaned up Times Square, took away all the prostitutes, which was a darn shame, and the movie theaters and the strip theaters.
Yeah.
But no, I haven't gone back. Why do you ask?
Well, I was having a very interesting conversation with a former Lockheed engineer who was also studying economics, and we were having a similar discussion of what we're talking about. And he said that many people have commented that since 9/11, New York is a totally different place to be. People are no longer rude, they don't cut people off, they are much more loving.
Really?
Yeah.
Huh.
So, you know, it might be interesting someday for you to go back there. I never lived in New York, so I don't know what it was like before, but someone who's lived there might really be shocked at the change that a little bit of adversity brings.
As soon as the outstanding warrants for me in New York are completed, I'll be happy to go back. But, Americans, now we get a bad rap a lot of times around the world, but Americans are pretty good people. I was in Texas for a while, very nice people, a little too conservative for my taste, but very nice, and I find that, ironically, people are very friendly here. It's a different type of friendliness, but they're very polite, so I think sometimes we get a bad rap, you know, here in America.
Well,
but,
that's probably more because of the corporate actions. You know, the governments don't rule the world anymore. The corporations do, the multinational corporations. And they do things that aren't exactly in alignment with ethical and spiritual principles, but yet they get identified as being American. And some of the things that probably the American government's done, the CIA's done, that's probably why people in other countries don't like Americans.
I do think we're in sort of a paradigm shift, because we have many people who are still into separation consciousness,
mm-hmm.
you know, who still think, well, you know, I put out something and I can take advantage of somebody and hurt somebody and there's no effect.
Right.
And a lot of the corporations which employ a lot of people, which have to maintain a certain amount of income flow, you know, they think that way. And then other individuals are realizing we're all interconnected. So another thing that's very important to me, and I have two chapters about it, in The Rascal's Guide to Enlightenment, is about the environment. And I think one of the lessons that we're learning about unity consciousness and about the environment is that, you know, if they pollute in China, it's going to affect us. If we pollute here, it's going to affect us. So when I wrote the two chapters, the eco-friendly organic tofurkey transmissions and the quest for Roberthal in The Rascal's Guide to Enlightenment, I wanted to raise awareness about that. But that's something that's really been very good for my spiritual growth. And I think even the corporations, I know one of the things I had been working on, one of the issues was reusable bags. And I had lobbied some of the corporations to carry more of them. But even with Walmart, where it's very problematic, some of the things that they do, they are building more energy-efficient stores. They are offering reusable shopping bags. They did promote, you know, compact fluorescent light bulbs. So I think that the corporations, in a way, the profit motive is going to force them to be more
green. The government and the corporations will move toward corporate responsibility, but they have to do so together. You know, the government has to be in line with these ideals, or otherwise people don't get rewarded in a tax environment for doing the things. But once we start rewarding people for being responsible at the business level, then everything else follows, I think.
Well, I saw one great program for people who recycle. Now, you know, people are recycling more than ever nowadays, but still a lot of stuff goes in the landfill. So there's a company, I can't remember the name of it right now, but basically they give everybody like a collection thing, and when the people collect the recycling material based on how much they donate, they get like a gift card to like a store. So they're actually paying people who are recycling.
Yeah, I read that too, or saw it on TV. Yeah,
I was very excited yesterday. I was looking online on Google, and Toyota is building a solar car. They're developing a solar car.
That's
that,
right. Yeah.
And I just heard that. So it's very interesting, because from a metaphysical perspective, we create our reality. And I know that as I focus on living in a more peaceful world and a more environmentally green world, I notice that more aware of it. And then I noticed the people who supported Sarah Palin who think that Obama's the Antichrist. So there's a big paradigm change, a big skewed realities we live in.
Well, one thing I'd like to remind the listeners about is the interesting effects that Pluto can have when it hits a sign. For the last 18 years, Pluto has been on Sag, and Sag represents philosophy and religion. And, you know, back in the 30s and 40s, if you were in a secret society and you revealed the secrets, you could even be killed or at least ousted. And now all those secrets are on the bookshelves in the metaphysical, you know, bookstores. So obviously whatever was hidden and secret has been revealed. Now, what you may not know, or you may know it if you follow astrology, is that the first day that Pluto went into Capricorn, we had the economic crisis. Hmm. Now, Capricorn represents finance and government. So for the next 18 years, whatever is hidden in finance and government will be revealed.
You mean I'm going to be audited?
Well, what I wonder is at the end of that period, will the IRS even be viable or recognizable as we see it? Because I don't believe that the Federal Reserve and the IRS are exactly in alignment with spiritual principles.
There was that documentary, I think it was called From Freedom to Fascism, where mm-hmm. it talks about how there is actually no law where we have to pay
exactly.
personal income tax.
Yeah.
You know, but as for the astrology, you're right. New things are being revealed. As a matter of fact, only now can I announce new services that I can offer for the first time because I can reveal it without any fear. And these are my things that are variations of what you do: the guru tuck, money suction, miracle plasty, and of course the wallet lift. So if anybody wants to receive those services, I am the guru for you. GuruMatsu.com. Thank you.
There you go. A little plug there. I like that. Oh, that's great. So where are you calling from?
I am in Colorado.
Oh, okay.
I try to tell people where I'm at all the time because I, you know, various people after me, debtors, the police, and also usually some of my ex-wives. So I try to move around. I'm very mobile. I'm a very mobile guru.
Know your name, so it's okay.
That's right. Matzo, it's, you know, that's a secret. Well, actually, you know, I am a metaphysical teacher in my own right.
Great.
And then I have this other personality, so it's a little bit difficult being two people. But, you know, also, I just want to mention a little plug, and maybe if you ever have an opening over at your center, I don't know if you ever do dentistry, but I'm developing a little bit of holistic dentistry. Okay, sir, you're done now. Please pay the lady at the desk. You have to, in this economy, you've got to have multiple streams of income. So I do dentistry, nose candling, which is a new thing. I perform weddings. I perform divorces.
Mm-hmm.
I sleep with rich widows. I do everything to keep
good.
The money flowing.
Yeah.
That's the way it goes.
Yeah.
Anyway.
Well, that's great. So what would you advise people? I know as a metaphysical teacher and a comedian, but as a metaphysical teacher, it is very important not to buy into the doom and gloom. And
that's right.
You want to comment on that because you talk about that in your book. But during this time, I think everybody's like in final exams on that principle.
Well, here's the thing. Since you talk about astrology, 2012, people talk about, let me just talk about a moment about 2012.
Sure.
And this is in the Mayan calendar. I'm not getting into all the technicalities of it, but basically on December 21st, 2012, it's an important astrological or astronomical cycle.
Mm-hmm.
And for a clarification for a lot of people, because as we get closer, people are going to be talking about it. One of the ideas is that it's an apocalypse. It's the destruction of the world or something, and people are promoting that. And that's a very superficial understanding. It actually means a deconstruction.
Right.
Of an old paradigm, of an old way of thinking, which we could think of as 12-24,
mm-hmm.
Which means, you know, 12 months, 24 hours, linear time, struggle. A lot of the old thinking of that humanity is divided, that we're separate from our reality, all those things are sort of falling apart. So
mm-hmm.
when we look at the economy, to me, and just life in general, what I see are either a lot of people who are either focusing on the positive and dealing with
mm-hmm.
their issues, or they are no longer able to sustain realities that do not reflect their inner truth, so those are falling apart. But the essence of 2012 is that as we get closer to that time, our personalities, and since I have many personalities, I know about this, will become more aligned with our higher self, with our soul, with God. So you will see many people from all religions coming to some quote conclusions, trying to find out what's the best way to live. It doesn't matter where they're from. And then a lot of intensity. Now, the Middle East, obviously, I just heated up with Israel and what's going on there. And there's a couple of reasons why, but really what it is it's almost like, the example I like to give is, it's like when you go out and you drink a lot of alcohol, and usually when I go out, I let other people buy me drinks, but that's another topic. But you go out and you get really drunk, and the next morning, if you don't know how to handle your liquor, you get sick. You vomited up.
Right.
And that's the way your body trying to heal itself. So if you look at the world, actually, for the most part, it's pretty peaceful. We have some hot spots, but that particular area, historically has a lot of negativity. It's almost like an escape valve. So it's almost like the last, you know, expelling, last, you know, releasing of all that negativity, because they're losing, you know, they're running out of options there. So eventually, they're going to have to just say, you know what, whatever's happened in the past, we're going to have to make peace at some point, because economically we're all tied together. So you will see extremes. You'll see extreme bliss and happiness and ecstasy, and other people who are struggling. So the bottom line is, when I'm looking at the economic situation, I don't really get upset, because I know that the media tends to exaggerate everything. Yes, we have 7 or 8% unemployment, but there are a lot of people who are fine, who have jobs, who are happy, and other people who are not doing so well. But it's not like everything's collapsing. But they have to make a story. So that's it, you know.
Yeah, I think we have to watch our thoughts. As a spiritual teacher, I'm sure you have different methods for the students to do this, but become the observer. And when you start creating scarcity in your life and creating or projecting that you're going to lose your job or projecting that you're going to not have things, that you need to just stop it. I mean, it's more a matter of just observing, seeing what you're doing, and then stopping it, project other things that are a little more positive.
Well, there's ways to reorganize your reality. So there's many different reality creation techniques I use, but I do some philanthropic work. You know, after I sell people lousy products and give false promises and collect money from them, I make sure I try to balance it out by doing good things for people. So recently, this is a very interesting process. I was going to, I had volunteered for the Obama campaign, and then what happened was is that all the volunteers, we had these meetings, and they said, okay, each group in all the different cities around the country, we're all going to do some sort of community service project, you know, to help out before the inauguration, which is going to be, you know, this upcoming weekend, not this weekend, but next weekend. That's before the week before the inauguration. So our group said, let's do a food drive. So I contacted some supermarkets. I said, you know, can we sit out here and can we collect food? And, you know, and they said, no, we can't, because, you know, they gave me some couple of different reasons why. Mm-hmm. And what ended up happening was, I didn't give up. I contacted the regional person for one particular food chain, and I said, look, we want to do this for a food bank, blah, blah, blah. Anyway, long story short, I didn't have to do a food drive, but they donated $1,700 to the food bank.
Right. Yeah.
So, because I basically appealed to them, and they said, okay, we can do it, no problem. So, interesting enough, I found a solution. So, human beings are very good at finding solutions. So, for all the listeners, when you're looking at whether the environmental issues or issues in your own life or the economic issues, human beings, when they're pushed up against the wall, we'll find a solution. Now, that's not always the smartest way to do. The smartest thing to do is to listen to your intuition and look
and
at the feedback
the
in your reality. Yeah, look at the feedback in your reality and act proactively. Mm-hmm. But when I look at the things, I mean, especially with the environment, there are so many things. There's a city out in, I think, in California where they recycle all their water, so they don't, you know, they do, it's all healthy. There are solar plants being built, wind power, so a lot of these things are being dealt with, but they don't report it. So realize when you're watching the media or even talking to other people, you have to ask, what are they vibrating with? What level of consciousness?
Yeah, that's...
Gosh, I'm smart.
Matsu for president.
That's right. That way, you know, I'm going to run in 2016, you know.
Yep.
I promise many followers for everybody who votes for me. That's it. They're going to develop their own guru thing.
Gurus to go.
That's right. Thank you.
So what other messages does Matsu have for the new year? What should our New Year's resolutions be?
All right, well, here's a couple of thoughts. So first of all, money is very spiritual. The more money I have, the more spiritual I feel.
Right.
So if you want to help me feel spiritual, make a donation. That's number one. Very important. Number two, buy my book, The Rascal's Guide to Enlightenment, because I'm a very humble and gentle soul. Also, I want everybody to realize very simply, it's a very simple idea, but separation is an illusion. The essence of all objects are real, but the perception they are separate is not. Everything is interconnected. And four, you can't go wrong with any Matzo brand product. For example, Matzo brand toilet paper. Listen to this, people. You want to what? You find a way to enlightenment. Use Matzo brand toilet paper. Matzo brand toilet paper smells like incense, feels like silk. Matzo brand toilet paper, because we're spiritual beings having a physical experience of pooping. Thank you.
Well, that's great. So, what are some of your other products?
Other products here. Let me tell you. See if you can tell me what this is.
Don't know.
You sure? You don't know? Let me try it again. See, let all the listeners see.
Anything. Woodpecker?
No. I don't have a Matzo brand woodpecker, but I'll add it to the list. I'll give it to the development people. That's a good idea. Woodpecker. I can do all forest animals,
yeah.
Stuffed animals.
Yeah.
All right. Thank you very much. You're not going to get a royalty for that, but thank you.
Yeah. Yeah.
That is the sound of one hand clapping. It's actually the Matzo brand self-esteem energizer.
Uh-huh.
So listen, I figured out early on, you gotta see, every holistic practitioner has to have products. You do plastic surgery, which is kind of a big ticket item, and thank you, thank you for giving me the discount on doing my nose job, my rhinoplasty. I can't make any money from telling people to hug themselves. So what I did was I came with the Matzo brand self-esteem energizer, which is a hand clapper. And this, when you're not feeling good about yourself, you can just, you know, use the self-esteem energizer, give yourself a boost, a quick boost of worthiness. And it comes in three sizes, small, medium, and the large size, which is, I really have some major issues that prevent me from loving myself for any reason.
Okay.
So that's a product. Many other things.
What does it look like?
It's like a hand. It's on page, everybody, let's see.
One hand clapping.
It's kind of like, that's actually another product I have, but everybody, please turn to page 57 mm-hmm. in the Rational Guide to Enlightenment, and you'll see the Matzo brand self-esteem energizer.
Okay, let me look at it.
Yeah, it's right there. Every chapter has, different products,
different. The Luck Rock.
Luck Rock. Well, see, Luck Rock's very important because when you're down on your luck and, you know, your friend Chuck lets you down and, you know, somebody makes you food and it tastes like yuck, you just rub your Luck Rock. Now, Luck Rock has two purposes. If you need luck, you rub it, and that will make you lucky. If not, you just go out to a jewelry store, throw the rock through the window, take what you need, and then, you know, be on your way. That's lucky. That's Luck Rock.
Yeah, you can't go
wrong. It's very good. Like I get them really cheap. See, that's a good marketing too, because I get the rock for like one penny and I sell it for $20. So it's a good markup.
That's a good markup.
That's right.
Yeah.
You know, this is a suggestion, Dr. Kolb. You can always refer to the suggested interview questions on GuruMatzo.com media page.
Oh, okay.
I did create that. Let's try to stick to the script.
Matzo. Okay. Well,
I'll do a sales pitch while you're looking at
it. Question while I get there.
All right. Well, you know, okay. I want to share with people. First of all, in the Rational Guide to Enlightenment, there's a very just by buying it mm-hmm. in the beginning of the book, you get two very key documents. Mm-hmm. One is the beingness coupon, which when you're not feeling good about life, you can just refer to the coupon. Now, you can't redeem it at a supermarket, but nonetheless, it's very good. But what I'm most proud of is the certificate of enlightenment that comes with every book. So all you got to do, basically, you open up the page XIII, and you'll see the certificate of enlightenment. And this is basically backed by me and the Maryland Chambers of Commerce to ensure your enlightenment. You put your name in there, you frame it, and you're good to go. You're enlightened. You don't even have to read the book. You just can go to the chat page, XII, and the Rational Guide to Enlightenment, and get the certificate and impress all your friends with your certificate. See how easy that is? You see how easy I make enlightenment?
Yeah, you are. That's great. So you can just, put it on your credit card.
Yeah, that's true. I do, yes, that's true.
Yeah. Here it is.
Good.
Suggested interview questions.
Oh, boy, man, that's good. That's a great title.
Okay. The Adobe Acrobat Reader that is running cannot be used. Don't you love these messages from your computer? Please exit and try again.
It won't
let me in. What does
everybody
that mean?
Please exit and try again.
Yeah. Oh, good Lord.
Let's take a look here. No?
Well, we may have to have you do them because it won't let me in.
Hold on one second.
There's a Adobe Reader coming up.
Mine works fine.
I know.
Okay, no problem. I'm going to go with this. Here we go. I'll pretend I'm you.
Okay.
So, Matzo, what's the key to enlightenment? Oh, thank you, Dr. Cole, for asking such a great question. The key to enlightenment is to get everything wholesale.
I must be really enlightened then.
That's right. There you go. Boy, we learned something new. Ooh, that's going to be on the front of the National Enquirer tomorrow. Question number two. Matzo, why did you write this book? Another good question. Basically to make money. Because, you know, when you're a holistic practitioner, you know, people don't want to pay for enlightenment. They just want to buy the Course in Miracles and go to a free class and then, you know, talk about their issues. But they don't want to pay you. So as a holistic practitioner, you have to remember ABC. And ABC means always be collecting. So with the book, I can always be collecting money and revenue and hopefully some residuals. That's great. Thank you. Now, but this is great when I do the interview by myself. Now, the truth is, I actually am everything in existence, and we are each reflections of the one universal presence, so I can just kind of do it myself. What would people get out of reading it? Well, they get many things, but mostly I'll get $12.95. Here's a good one. Matzo, what is the Matzo code? Oh, that's great. Well, you see, the book title is a parody of many of the popular spirituals, like A Course in Miracles I parody, the Celestine Prophecy, the Shmikrit, the Secret, I call it the Shmikrit, it's really not, and the Matzo Code, the Da Vinci Code. So what the Matzo Code is, at the end of every chapter in The Rascal's Guide to Enlightenment, is super Shmikrit questions, and then you have to decode it using a code called the Matzo Code on page 130, which is a parody for you Mayanologists of the Dzogchen, which is the Mayan sacred calendar. Gosh, I have so many levels. I'm such a fascinating guy. You're right, Matzo. Okay, what else is going on here?
I'm going back to your website, but I can't get into that page. But I can get into your website.
Listen, Dr. Kolb, I want you to hop on the train and find another computer. Listen, while you're figuring that out, I want to do an appeal here for the Matzo Brand Fund.
Uh-huh.
The fund, I want everybody to donate. You know what I'm going to be doing, since we have some filler time here? What I'm going to be doing is to help the economy, I am going to build the world's largest tip jar. And I, Matzo, the unleavened one, will sit in that tip jar for 24 hours to raise awareness about my dwindling bank account. So I want everybody, when I build the tip jar, and I'm working on right now with a contractor, to come to the tip jar and throw money in. You can throw cash, change. Please, you know, no luck rocks. I mean, again, I don't give refunds to the Matzo brand luck rocks, so it's clearly in the no guarantee. And then I'm going to take that money, and that will raise awareness. The other thing I'm going to do is the Million Tip Jar March. And what I'm going to do is I'm going to give out, well, maybe I'll sell them. I'll probably sell them for a discount. A little bit. I'm going to sell a million Matzo brand tip jars, and then we're going to march to all the corporations that got the bailout money, and we're going to stand outside AIG and Citibank and all those guys, and as the employees come out, we're going to panhandle so we can get some of that money back to us.
There you go.
Gosh,
that's a
great
idea.
I'm a visionary. I'm a visionary.
You are a visionary.
I'm a visionary. I'm a dentist.
Uh-huh.
And I've got a lot of self-esteem.
There you go.
Okay. I feel good now.
Well, here we have the 7 dirty words you can't say at a motivational seminar.
All right. Well, this was actually that's actually a little nod to one of my heroes, George Carlin. The 7 dirty words you can't say at a motivational seminar.
Right.
Here we go. Can't, couldn't, no, not, never, impossible, refund.
There you go. I like that last one.
Now, I want to tell you, this is based on a true story, Dr. Cole. What happened was, when I was living in Florida at the time, some guy came through. I'm not going to say his name, but he was a very eccentric guy. And he was going to do a workshop, $500. I said, that's a lot. I've never paid $500 for a workshop. I paid for a female escort, but I've never paid for a workshop. But that's another story. So the guy came. He was so positive. He was a triple Aries.
Uh-huh.
And for people who don't know what a triple Aries is, that's somebody who's completely insane. Now, I'm an Aries, but I'm not a triple Aries. If I was a triple Aries, I would, like, my hair would be, you know, extended away in the air. I'd be jumping up and down, and I'd be trying to dominate everybody.
Mm-hmm.
But usually I like people to dominate me, especially women, female escorts. But that's another story. So anyway, so he came to town. He did a great sales pitch. I said, okay, I'm going to go. So I went there to the workshop. It was a two-day workshop. And the first day, he was like a really, he was like a super genius. This guy must have like a 10,000 IQ. He was talking about all these ideas, and so for the first time, you're like fascinated by just, this guy's just like saying all those things. You're like, you know, it's like blowing your mind. But then the second hour, you begin to get psychically drained. The third hour, you're like, what are we doing here? Like, what is this workshop? So I ended up walking out halfway through, and they wouldn't give me a refund.
Mm-hmm.
The second time, now here's the second, this happened to me two times though, but the second time had a good experience for me. Second time, it was a guy who was doing emotional healing. Mm-hmm. And this was many, many years ago when I was a little more neurotic than I am at this current now moment. But I went to the emotional healing thing, and he was a nice guy, traveling around, he's a respected healer, and you know, some people, if I'd mention his name, I'm not going to mention his name because he's not giving me any sponsorship money, I would mention his name. But he went up and he was doing a two-day workshop on emotional healing. So I said, okay, we'll go and we'll have processes, we'll do things, we'll learn stuff.
Mm-hmm.
What did the guy do? He gets up, starts talking, and then he had his table because he did energy work. So he'd bring somebody up, he'd work on them, talk to them, talk about some of the principles, and then let them sit down. So the first day, this is all he's doing. I'm like, well, I'm not here to be a practitioner of this.
Right.
What's going on? So now the second day came. So the second day, I'm like, all right, let me just keep on waiting. Something's going to happen. Let me be patient. Let me don't be impatient, Matzo, you know, whatever. Okay, well, no problem. I don't want a bird pooping on my head again to, you know, snap me out of it. But all right, I'll sit there and wait. So what happens is I'm sitting there. It's getting near lunch. So he says, look, we're going to order out for lunch, blah, 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 blah. And they want to take my order. I said, I'm not going to be eating lunch. I'm not coming back.
Mm-hmm.
Everybody in the class stopped. He said, why? I said, well, look, I said, I'm here to do a workshop about emotional healing, and all you've done is talk. I mean, it's been interesting and, you know, whatever. I said, but we're not learning any techniques.
Mm-hmm.
And he said, well, if you're good, so he kept on arguing back and forth with me, and he finally said, well, if you're going to leave, do you want to come from the table? I said, no, thank you. And then it was funny because the whole energy in the room shifted, and at that moment I realized, even though teachers are good and healers are good, I didn't have to follow somebody. I could find another path. And after that, I accelerated my spiritual growth quite a bit. So it was an interesting thing about taking my power back and not just trying to fit myself into that person's reality structure, which was a little bit skewed.
Mm-hmm.
Let me just do a sound effect here.
Okay.
Anyway, that was the realization I had.
There you go. And it kind of catapulted you out of being a patient.
Follower, in a way,
follower. Yeah.
You know, it's good to have gurus. Now, of course, I'm always promoting my gurus because that's how I make, it's my major stream of income. I want followers, I want people to adore me and totally give me all their power and energy. But seriously, though, the reason I do Matzo, the character, is to entertain people, but also to make them question things. Again, in my experience, it's very dangerous if we give our power over the individuals, even people we like. And I had an experience with a guru. He was of the Eastern tradition, a very loving guy. He was a healer and a yoga master. But I became aware that because a lot of the people were very codependent, the followers were needy, he could manipulate them. He was taking money from them and doing things. And so even though he had a lot of good things to offer, we're all human.
Mm-hmm.
We're all human, so we have to be, if we want to be powerful beings, we have to take our responsibility back. And, of course, everyone also has to buy the Rascal's Guide to Enlightenment. That's the other key.
That's right. Well, I think some people have to go through that experience where they realize that and quit giving their power away. I just like to look at all the different masters. I think that they're all fascinating. I think that they, I used to go out to dinner with the masters. One of my friends brought the masters into Atlanta for various workshops a few years ago, and she'd mm-hmm. always snag me to go out to dinner with the masters on the Friday night before the weekend seminar. So I got to meet a whole bunch of them. And what's interesting to me is not only mainly their energy field. And then the other thing is I have a TV and a radio show. So I've interviewed, you know, Andrew Weil, Deepak Chopra, and even the Dalai Lama was supposed to stay at my house during the Olympics, but he ended up not coming here. So I have had the opportunity to meet a lot of really, really evolved people. And they have a similar energy field, and they have a similar, their eyes are similar.
Mm.
So the energy coming through their eyes is very, very similar master to master, irregardless of whether they're a Sufi master, an Eastern master, an American master. And I think that has convinced me more than anything that that's the level we're going toward, and that's the oneness. The energy is the oneness. And once you remove enough blockages within yourself, the energy that comes through the unobstructed energy field is the spiritual energy that we're all trying to get to.
I agree, and what I tried to do in The Rascal's Guide to Enlightenment is to give a lot of jokes, but to give people little tips about mindfulness. One of the chapters I'm very proud of is about pet peeves, because a lot of metaphysical or spiritual people, they deny their angry feelings or their issues, and they say, well, I'm studying The Course in Miracles, I'm supposed to love everybody, but there are annoying things that happen, and one of the ways that I've learned to grow spiritually was to surround myself with tons of annoying people, because they would push my buttons, they would make me look at myself, and that was one of my techniques, was to surround myself. So that's one of the things I really promote, is to create our reality consciously, we have to be aware of the contents of our beliefs, emotions, thoughts, and actions.
Right.
And before we get to that state of love that you mentioned, or the spirituality, the higher levels, mm-hmm. we have to acknowledge, you know, maybe I don't love myself. Maybe I can't always receive. Maybe I do try to control people. I mean, mm-hmm. the best thing that ever happened to me were the things that didn't work out, because I went through several periods of really dark nights of the soul where uh-huh. my life fell apart, and you know, just my things were shattered. Relationships didn't work, or business opportunities didn't work, and that collapse, that breakdown, allowed for a breakthrough, because I was able to go beyond the personality or ego. And you need an ego. An ego is a container for your infinite self. So you need an ego. There's nothing the matter with having that, but it's allowing that ego or personality to be directed and guided by the higher self. So when you describe these gurus and teachers, the eyes, the way I interpret it is that they are perceiving reality from a whole different other paradigm. So mm-hmm. that soft, soulful gaze, they're seeing beyond, all the chaos, and they're seeing truly. They have a true perception of reality.
Yeah, Carolyn Mace said that in order to get through the dark night of the soul, in order to get to spiritual enlightenment, you have to either lose everything, like all your relationships break apart, you declare bankruptcy, you know, you lose your house, all this sort of stuff, or you have to think that you're going to lose everything. And so you don't actually have to lose everything, but you have to be in a position where you're willing to give up everything.
I think you said it right there, giving up. I believe it's definitions. I think there are many pathways to enlightenment, and one that I've really wanted to embrace is joy, because a lot of the paths are about, you know, asceticism, or mm-hmm. you know, eating a lot of brown rice, or sitting in a cave, or doing service for everybody. And a lot of these things, if you really look at them, are not loving to the self. I mean, they're good
right.
lessons, and they're valid, because
yeah.
there are many different paths. But I think it's our definitions and of letting go, mm-hmm. and you can either be shocked into that. That's one way. Our particular generation was very accelerated. I know now I'm a Generation X. A lot of my friends are baby boomers, and the vibrations continually become more up leveled as we go along. So I always have in high regard the people who are the baby boomers, because they came in at a very turbulent time.
Mm-hmm.
My generation had a little bit easier, and now the kids nowadays, the vibration on the planet is so much lighter mm-hmm. and easier than it used to be. But we are in a very intense period of transformation, so a lot of times things become very accelerated, and so either you might have a lot of chaos, or you feel in flux, or what we call the void. So the void is that you kind of like nothing's really happening. Maybe you're just being reflective. Maybe some relationships fall off. But we are literally having to let go of the old paradigm and old habits and old beliefs, and then kind of go through a limbo period in which we can reintegrate and get a new vision and then step into a higher reality. So a lot of times maybe the listeners are experiencing where things don't quite flow, or things are a little bit incoherent. That is actually a reflection of the transformation that we are going through.
Yeah, I wanted to share with the listeners what happened to me, because it was a little bit different, but it worked just the same, getting through that. It's actually a process of detaching from everything.
Mm.
I was told to quit my job in meditation. I'm always guided from within. So I quit my job. I was earning $400,000 a year. My partner thought I was crazy.
Gosh, I wish I'd married you then.
then
are you still single? Are you doing well now?
but I was off for 5 months. I studied with a group of clairvoyants. I meditated 5 to 7 hours a day, and I really went through a major shift. But during that time, I was told, and all the other clairvoyants were told, that I was going to die in a car accident on 285. And even my mother played into this. My mother called me up and said, I'm really worried you're going to get in a car accident. You know, everything around me was pointing toward me getting in a car accident and dying. So I just accepted it. It took about 4 hours. I felt sorry for myself for about two, and then for the other two, I just got my affairs in order. And then I released everything. I released all my relationships, all my physical things, my job, everything. I just released everything. And then 2 weeks went by, and then 3 weeks went by, and little signs kept coming. Well, I guess you're not going to die. So I didn't. I didn't die. But I thought I was going to lose everything.
Mm. It feels like dying. It feels like dying when the ego is...
Yeah,
is,
but it can be done rather quickly and without a lot of drama. You can just release it.
That's what I would like. That's why one of the reasons I wrote the book, because I saw people taking themselves so seriously, and myself included. And so when I'm parroting, whether it's the environmental stuff or you know making fun of snags, which are sensitive New Age guys,
right,
or segs, which are spiritually enthusiastic, you know, goddesses, and mm-hmm. in all those chapters, it's to make people lighten up. Because I had a very profound experience years ago at a workshop where the woman was talking about abundance. She said, you know, how are we going to create abundance unless we have the belief structure to support it?
Right.
And I think if we as a New Age movement or metaphysical people, or just the planet as a whole, is going to move into more bliss and happiness and love, we have to create that structure. And one of the things is simply being lighthearted, so when a problem comes up in my life, I can analyze it. I can say, well, I'm the creator of my reality. I can do many things with it,
mm-hmm.
but I can also say, what's funny about this?
Mm-hmm.
What's funny about this? I had a conflict. I sometimes I get in arguments with people. I know I'm a very loving and just fun guy, but sometimes I get in arguments with people, and it was a Canadian broadcaster. I was on a show,
mm-hmm.
and whereas you're a wonderful host and very warm and loving and just, you know, friendly and easygoing, this guy was a real jerk. And so he was on the thing, and he, you know, what they did was he had like a million commercials on the show,
mm-hmm.
and at the very end he played a cartoon for like 3 minutes, so he wouldn't let me talk.
Mm-hmm.
And he was just a very strange, odd guy. I try to talk about Canadian politics. I mean, I do my research, man. I'm a professional. So anyway, I emailed him. I said, you know, I would have preferred, you know, I think you're very passive aggressive. So anyway, all of a sudden, even though I made him laugh, which was a miracle in of itself, during the show,
mm-hmm.
with the Monster brand toilet paper, which is one of my big products, my biggest seller, he suddenly had to savage me. And so I laughed at it. And I said, you know, this is absurd. And that's why in the book I mentioned the planter's principle. And for those of you who don't know what the planter's principle, buy my book. But I'm going to tell you. The planter's principle is based on the planter's peanuts guy. That's the little guy with the top hat and the monocle.
Mm-hmm.
And the planter's principle is basically everybody is nuts. We all have our reality bubbles. We have our neurosis. You can meet nice people like Dr. Kolb. But, you know, we all have our issues. So when people are rude to you or unkind, they're living in a very narrow reality, or they're just funky, you know.
Mm-hmm.
They just think that, you know, they should buy a Hummer and drive around and waste gas,
mm-hmm.
you know, whatever. Remember, everybody's nuts. When you understand that everybody's crazy, basically, because they're living, they're evolving out of an old paradigm,
mm-hmm.
you can relax. You can lighten up. You can just smile. So smile.
Yeah, have no expectation, and you'll never be disappointed.
That's right.
Well, Matsu, we are coming up to the end of our hour. Would you like to give your contact information again?
Absolutely. Guru Matsu, GURUMATZO.com. I have a monthly newsletter. Also, my book, The Rascal's Guide to Enlightenment, How to Become Enlightened on a Budget by Taking a Course in the Power of the Celestial Speaker Prophecy, Matsu Code Now, copyright registered trademark, is on the bookstore shelves. You can buy it at GuruMatsu.com or go to DreamTreePress.com. Matsu brand toilet paper, we have plenty in stock. Matsu brand self-esteem energizers, it's there. If you need nose candling or holistic dentistry, I'm your man. I'll even go on a date with Dr. Kolb if he comes to my area. You see, everything. That's all I got to promote right now.
Oh, that's great. That's great. Well, it's been a pleasure interviewing you, and I enjoyed your book tremendously.
Good.
And if you're ever in Atlanta, if you do your schedule out here for your either your comedian or your spiritual following, please give me a call.
When I get that gleam in my eyes and I reach the level of all the other masters, I'll stop by.
There you go. Thank you. Well, this has been Susan Kolb, Dr. Kolb with Temple of Health Radio Show. Next week we are going to be interviewing Dr. Dawson Church, The Genie in Your Genes. I haven't read the book yet, but I hope to before next week. And the week after, we're going to be interviewing Dr. Stephen Broad with The Gold Leaf Lady and Immortal Remains. And this is some very interesting evidence for the survival of consciousness after death. We were actually talking to Dr. Russell Targ, who recommended this material in terms of the question, does consciousness survive our physical death? On the 24th of January, we will be interviewing Ron Garner on his book, Conscious Health. And on the 31st, Dr. Daniel Benor, 7 minutes to natural pain release. Our Noetic Science meeting is on the 15th of January, that's Thursday. Dr. Brad Gould will be talking about balancing the energetic aspects of the body and the environment. Brad is a very interesting doctor who knows a lot about alternative energetic technology, and I'm sure this will be very interesting. This will be at 7:30 at the main office. For more information, you can call 770-457-4677. Thank you very much for joining us on Temple of Health Radio Show, and we will be back next week.
You had plastic surgery, Bill?
You bet I did. I got tired of the wrinkles around my eyes and decided to have Plasticos do something about them.
But I didn't think men had plastic surgery.
Get with it, Bob. Men want to look their best, too. There's nothing wrong with getting a little help from Plasticos to look on top of your game. A lot of guys are doing it, my friend.
Well, I don't know about this.
Look, you see the difference Plasticos made with me. I look better and I feel better. My Plasticos surgery was an investment in me.
So where is Plasticos?
Plasticos is in Dunwoody. Plasticos is staffed by pros who guarantee you personal attention. The Plasticos number is 770-457-4677. Mention this ad for a free consultation. Financing is available. 770-457-4677.
I'm sick and tired of always feeling sick and tired, and I don't want to take a lot of prescription drugs to feel better. Isn't there a better way?
Millennium Healthcare offers natural solutions to your health problems. Millennium Healthcare is qualified healthcare professionals working with you to restore your health and wellness. Whether it's a caring physician, one of our natural providers, or our natural apothecary, Millennium Healthcare can help. For more information, call Millennium Healthcare at 770-390-0012. That's 770-390-0012.
Headaches, back pain, migraines, joint pain, nothing worse than the nagging, unending discomfort of daily aches and pains. If you have pain and are looking for more natural solutions to eliminate your pain, Millennium Healthcare is for you. Millennium Healthcare's professionals will work for you. For help or more information on natural pain relief, call Millennium Healthcare at 770-390-0012. That's 770-390-0012. Millennium Healthcare. Pain relief naturally.
So you had plastic surgery. What was it like?
It was great. Don't get me wrong. It was surgery, but the doctors and staff at Plasticos were terrific.
Honey, you look like $1 million. You actually went to Plasticos and had it done.
Why don't you? Plastic surgery is outpatient, and you'll only be out of work a few days. I love what Plasticos did for me, and looking my best is an investment that pays in so many ways. The help you get from the professionals at Plasticos is a bargain.
Plasticos, 770-457-4677. Mention this ad for a free consultation. Financing is available. 770-457-4677.
Don't you just hate trying on bathing suits? Wait a minute, you look great. Plastic surgery?
Not surgery. I got an endermology treatment from the experts at Plasticos.
What's endermology?
Endermology is the terrific non-surgical treatment that Europeans have been using for years to tone skin and contour the body. Endermology by Plasticos feels great, and you can see the difference it makes.
No kidding. Who do I call?
Plasticos, a leader in plastic and reconstructive surgery, is the number one center in Atlanta offering endermology. For more information and a complimentary consultation and treatment, call Plasticos at 770-457-4677. Plasticos Endermology Skin Toning and Body Contouring, 770-457-4677.